To the clatter and whack of tire chains and wiper blades, Dr. Butler steered her red Buick Roadmaster down the crunchy black tracks of an otherwise snowbound side street. The buildings left and right were a monotony of weathered 3 and 6 flats, slumlorded brick tenements that were once the fine apartments of thriving immigrant families, long since gone to their preferred neighborhoods and suburbs. Nick Weissman was in the back seat, wedged between Mary the midwife and Carla the nursing student. His classmate, Jeff Pierce, was riding shotgun. Nick asked, "What about our orientation?" Butler told him not to worry, that they'd finish it later. She sounded New England, though she'd been working out of the near west side of Chicago for almost half a century, delivering babies in buildings you wouldn't walk into if you had a choice, which these 2 senior medical students did not. "When we get up there, don't touch anything," she said. "Just watch me and Mary. You'll get plenty, believe me." She cracked the window and lit her 3rd Chesterfield in 20 minutes. Nick got the March morning air like a scalpel, then the sweet sulfur of the matchhead, then the smoke. Those who could, and Nick and Jeff certainly could not, called her butts. Out of the car, the 2 young men each carried a black leather instrument bag the size of a small suitcase. Carla schlepped a foot-high pile of newspapers, while Butler and Mary, the pros, walked ahead unencumbered. Butler's stride and bearing were all business, her bright red go-go boots a snappy non sequitur. "Come on, come on," Butler said, herding them through a front door into a barely warmer lobby of mailboxes and buzzers. The tile floor was filthy, sticky. Of the 6 doorbells, not one was labeled. Butler was about to try one when a boy, he looked about 8, appeared at the top of the 1st flight of stairs.
"You from the maternity?"
"That's right, son," Butler said. He waved them up and led their little caravan into the dark. Nick thought about his Jewish mother and her hand-me-down prohibitions, the perils of swimming after eating, of going outside with a wet head. If she knew where her 24-year-old son was at that moment, she'd have probably asked if he was trying to kill her. Butler told them to try not to breathe. It was too late for Nick. His stomach roiled with the reek, a melange of urine and feces and rotting garbage that saturated the stairwell. At the top landing, Butler was shooing them into an apartment like a basketball coach, her left arm extended and pointing into the open doorway, her right windmilling. "Let's go, let's go, let's go." Inside, the flat was a surprise. There was the aroma of baking, an olfactory antidote, Nick figured, for the stench of the building. And there was the smell of Lysol. They were in the living room, amid old but serviceable upholstered chairs, needlepoint pillows, and walnut tables covered with white tatting. There was a black spinet overflowing with sheet music. The floor was polished oak, and all 4 walls were covered with family photographs. The place was a home. They were welcomed by a calm and gracious dark-skinned woman, young enough to be the mother-to-be. She had a big afro and wore black horn-rimmed glasses. "Willa, my daughter, she's in the bedroom." She told them that Willa's pains were 5 minutes apart and that her water had just broke. Then she offered them coffee and pastry.
"Miss Brown, is it?"
Butler asked.
"Yes, May Brown."
"Well, thank you for your hospitality, but right now I think we'd best get to evaluating Willa. Is that the bedroom?"
Butler led them in. The small room was crammed with their crew of 5, Mother May, 2 mid-20-ish women who refer to themselves as the aunties, and Willa, looking every bit her 15 years. From a single bed in the corner, she looked up at Butler.
"Are you going to help me?"
Butler told her that she would, that they would.
"Would you cover my feet?"
Willa asked. She repositioned the girl's baby blue polyester blanket, squaring it to the foot of the bed and across the teenager's chest. The queasiness in Nick's gut was gone, replaced by the itch of apprehension. Protected and supervised, for the time being he was not in jeopardy. But he knew that soon enough he would be in a place like this, or much worse, on his own. Willow whimpered and said,
"Help me."
She had a flattened, hooked nose, bulgy brown eyes, and acne dotting her café au lait skin. Her hair, bunched into short and disorderly rubber-banded braids, was oiled.
"What's your name again?"
Butler said, looking at Nick. He told her for the third time in as many hours.
"Well, Weissman, we're going to examine this girl. Come over here and help get her into position."
Then she retrieved Jeff's identity and assigned him to the opposite side. Nick and his fellow student, a millimeter from doctorhood, survivors of the brain-stuffing, sleep-depriving, debt-encumbering 8-year pre-med and medical school marathon, were now going to be stirrups.